You're listening to the Overdrive Podcast, Hour 3, powered by Scarborough Nissan. Driving satisfaction.
It's the Rediscover the Road sales event. Finance a 2020 Rogue for 0% APR for 84 months or get a cash purchase bonus on other select models. Scarborough Nissan, Eglinton Avenue East at Warden.
Final hour, Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 on the TSN app, your home smart speaker, and up on TSN 2. Brian Hayes, Yo Dog, Jeff O'Neill. Jamie Noodles McLennan will catch up with Quentin Richardson, longtime NBAer. Just a moment, get his take on the LA Clippers and what happened, what went wrong. They were up 3-1 on Denver, and does Denver have a shot against the Lakers? I think they do if Jamal Murray keeps playing the way he's been playing. And Jokic is outstanding, and they got a pretty good team. They got a resilient team over there in Denver. So we'll catch up with him in about 5 minutes, and Scott Mitchell on the Jays and how they recover after just – getting bamboozled last night. I mean, you let a team hang 20 on you. It's tough to recover, especially when Garrett Cole is on the mound for them tonight.
I was just going to say, it's one thing giving up a 20 spot, but then you got to go back to the ballpark and that monster is waiting for you.
Yeah, that's
tough. It's just tough to get back on the train.
Yeah, this is the ultimate, you know, pivot game for me. You know, you find a way to win tonight. You prove that you've been learning something. You prove that you're resilient. You prove that you're gamers and that you're actually in it to win it. And there's a good chance you're going to hang on or maybe beat the Yankees for that 2 seed in the American League East. You fold over the sod tonight.
If
you let it hang on you and Cole goes 8 and he's flawless and you just look like you're swinging knowing you're going to miss and Tanner Roark is getting lit up in certain areas of his body, that's going to be a problem. You know, it's going to be a problem to recover for game 3. And guess what? You got a bunch more games. You got the Yankees 4 more times once you get through this 3-game series. So we'll catch up with Scotty later in the hour. And obviously we're tracking the U.S. Open. When does Tiger go off tomorrow?
Early, 8 a.m. 8 a.m.
Yeah, 8 a.m. here.
Okay. So we got Tiger Woods early tomorrow. We got an all-Canadian 3-pack playing tomorrow as well. So we're looking forward to that. And it's going to be great. So we'll get into the U.S. Open a little bit later in the hour as well. And the Golf Report is brought to you by your Ontario Subaru dealers. Fall back into adventure at your local Ontario Subaru dealer. Find your award-winning Subaru well-equipped for all seasons and enjoy rates from as low as 0.5%. There was a trade to announce, and Jerry was on at 5:30. Just missed it.
Yeah.
Eric Staal traded from Mini to Buffalo for Marcus Johansson. And just a flat-out one-for-one deal. They both have 1 year left on their deal. Stahl's an elder statesman.
Yeah.
He's 35. He'll be 36. I think he's still got a little bit of game left, but this is one of those, okay, he's a good player and he's expected to play, but he's also a culture leader type guy, and we'll see what he can bring in Buffalo. You know, and Eric Stahl's always played well against the Leafs as well, so you're going to get them 4 or 5 times next year, and Stahl's always stepped up and played pretty well. Historically against Toronto.
It'll be interesting. I was just looking at Buffalo's cap structure, like their team. Kevin Adams has got a lot of work to do there, not just with the team, but like he's got unrestricted free agents left and right. You know, like a guy like Wayne Simmons, 32 years old, play there. Like are you gonna walk from him or bring him back? So not only do they have money to play with, like he can actually reshape his forward. And he does need some work there, obviously. So
they need work everywhere in Buffalo.
Yeah. I mean, I like their goaltender, and I liked what they were doing there. Allmark has a chance to be a really good goalie, and this will be year 3 with Carter Hutton there mentoring him. I think the defenseman's really good, Dahlin. Like I like him. He's only 20, isn't he?
Yeah, he's only been in the league for 2 years. Dahlin's a centerpiece guy that you're building around.
He's got to make a move.
They've got
though.
Some work. Yeah, they've got work to do. No doubt about it. But I guess my point is I was checking to see if they were tied into like dead wood, you know, dead contracts and that. There's actually a lot of unrestricted free agents there, so he can flush out some of the stuff right away.
Yeah,
now,
but you
got to
wonder,
it?
Will the Pagulas spend money?
Yeah,
right?
You're right.
Like the Pagulas, they sent out that big email to everyone saying, we'd like to keep our yacht, and we'd like to keep playing golf and playing tennis and all that kind
lifestyle.
Of stuff. So
who knows what Jerry Pagula is going to be up to.
Yeah. He's a wild card, you know.
Yeah.
They're the ultimate wild card. And, you know, there's a distraction because the Bills are a pretty good team. They're 1-0, so he's got that going for him. And, you know, Kevin Adams, a new GM. He's got a team that hasn't even come close to making the playoffs for quite some time. We'll see. You know, you got to believe this is only the tip of the iceberg. Like this it's not like you're putting your paperwork away and you're saying job done. You know, we'll see when we play in the new year. There's going to be a lot. I wouldn't be surprised if Buffalo is one of the most active teams in the NHL.
Well, to your point,
they should be.
You know, to your point, Brian, they've got work to do. It'll just be interesting to see if they're working on an internal salary cap as well.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, so we've been talking a lot about what went wrong with the Clippers last night. You know, and some of the quotes that came out after the game are just absurd. Like absurd, indictments on what is wrong with that team. And we've got a guy who's very familiar with the Clippers, starting his career in L.A., a longtime NBAer, host of the Knuckleheads podcast, back on Overdrive. Here is Quentin Richardson. How do you explain that, Quentin? What happened to the Clippers in the second half last night?
Thanks for having me again, guys. I come to you guys disappointed today, man. I had big expectations and big plans to see the Battle of L.A. and enjoy that series, and hopefully my Clippers would have prevailed. But I don't know, man. I think it was just a combination of things, man. You know, when you look at the sum of the whole season, they never really got a chance to really be a cohesive unit between – you know, load management with Kawhi, injuries with Paul, injuries with Pat Bev, you know, all of the different scenarios that went on. And then when they got back to the bubble, I think, you know, when you got that type of talent in one locker room, I think you kind of take certain things for granted and kind of feel that it's just going to happen. And that's just not the way it goes in the NBA.
You just mentioned the load management with Kawhi. Are you suggesting that it rubbed people the wrong way or some of his other teammates? They talked about chemistry in their post-game presser, saying it wasn't there. Was that an element that kind of pissed guys off in the room, the load management with Kawhi?
I don't think anybody was I would say pissed off about it. I think that just the fact of it is it's tough to really get that cohesiveness and to get that togetherness when you don't have a full unit. It wasn't like it was just him out. He was in and out of the lineup. Paul George missed the start of the season and missed some time with his injuries that he had. And so those are the two main new pieces. And when you're building something around those guys and they're not available to you consistently and long enough, and then at the trade deadline they add new guys in, it was just like, you know, it was a lot of new faces and unfamiliarities going on. And when you have that, I'm by no means am I making an excuse for them. I still felt like they should have performed and they should have won this series and they should be playing the Lakers. So saying all this, it may sound like an excuse, but I'm not giving an excuse at all.
Well, I'm sure Kawhi is taking a lot of heat, you know, from Clipper fans, and he deserves to. He didn't play well last night at all. But, you know, Kawhi's got his two rings. He's got his two NBA Finals MVPs. Paul George has nothing like that on his resume, and he's got a history of a guy that comes up short come playoff time, and he was just flat out terrible last night. And then he comes up post game and goes, "We've always known that, you know, it's not championship or bust this year for us." If I'm the owner, I am freaking out at the idea of Paul George suggesting that they've got all the time in the world for this to connect. That's just not a good look, I don't think, for him to come out with a quote like that when you consider what his playoff history is to begin with, Quentin.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, playoff history aside, I mean, just in this circumstance, in this scenario, that's not, like you said, if I'm the owner or I'm a diehard fan, that's not something you want to hear. You want to hear, I mean, obviously, you know, it doesn't have to be, you know, championship or bust, but it should have absolutely been all about a championship and not really, you know, looking at anything else. Like, obviously, you got the next year, you have that. But it should have been, in my opinion, it should have been all about a championship, and that should have been the only focus. It should have been no talk of champions. This isn't a championship or bust, because, like you said, that means, like, what are we doing here?
Yeah, they had more than enough talent, and the expectations were on them, and I think they embraced it. They all thought that they could do it, and it didn't work out for them. But they go down to a team that's been resilient and a team that stormed back against Utah and stormed back down 3-1. And Jamal Murray's a kid from, you know, about 45 minutes outside of the city we reside in up here in Toronto. And, man, is he getting a ton of love up here, understandably so, deservedly so, probably way more in Denver. And I got to believe a lot of love throughout the NBA. When you look at a guy like Jamal Murray, how much better might he get? You know, is this a guy that could crack the top 10 in terms of best players in the world?
I mean, that's one of the things I looked at, though. I don't know if he can be – I think, you know, the sky's the limit for this kid. I mean, that's the other thing I like to say about, you know, when everybody's being so hard on the Clippers. I mean, the Denver Nuggets have been completely underestimated and overlooked, and those guys have obviously serious, you know, talent in that locker room, and they obviously are a team with great character and great, you know, perseverance. So, and Jamal Murray, like – this kid has just become, you know, a folk legend in the playoffs. He's gone down, come down to the bubble and made it his personal showcase. I think, you know, everybody in the NBA and everybody involved is watching is looking like, we don't know how good he could be. I don't think anybody's putting some type of cap on him because, in my opinion, nobody really expected this. So, I mean, he's already, you know, exceeded my expectations of what he could be and how clutch he is and how unstoppable he can be. So, I mean, I look at him as the sky's the limit.
We're chatting with Quinn Richardson, longtime NBAer, host of the Knuckleheads podcast. The appetizer last night, you know, that was the game that people are going to remember. I mean, Miami and Boston, it's shaping up to be a great series. I think it's going to resemble what we just saw between the Raptors and the Celtics. I think it's probably going seven. But you talk about someone who has allowed himself to feel very comfortable and use the bubble as his own platform. I think that basically is summing up Jimmy Butler and what he's managed to do since he's been down there. And him hitting big shots, I mean, he's Jimmy Buckets for a reason. Where does he rank for you in terms of a guy you want with the ball in his hands when there's only a few seconds left on the clock taking that final shot?
Nah, he's right up there with the best of them, man. And not just because he's going to take the shot either. I think the same way I say that Denver is kind of underestimated and overlooked, I think Jimmy Butler is severely underappreciated as a leader. I mean, when you look at this guy, he's not somebody who's going to go out there and try and score or average 30. He's going to get you, you know, above 20 points, but he's not going to go out there scoring and shooting every time. But what he's done for this Miami team, I mean, obviously we know the culture there. We know they bring in the right type of player. So they – when you look at the Tyler Heroes and the Duncan Robinsons and the Kendrick Nunns, like, everybody saw Tyler Hero in college. He had some confidence, but what you're seeing now is the result of having a leader like Jimmy Butler. When you saw in the Houston series, or the OKC game, the series when Chris Paul knocked him down, and then Jimmy Butler came down the very next play, knocked him down, flatlined him, threw the ball at him. Then in the post-game presser, told him, like, nah, I'm not going, you can't do that to my shooters while I'm here. So that empowers and encourages those young fellas to be themselves and to be who they are. And you see Duncan Robinson and all of these kids. Duncan Robinson was in a D3, then went to, you know, Michigan and didn't even average over 10 points. So you turn around and he's leading the whole entire NBA in threes and with the confidence he's playing with. That's because they have Udonis Haslam, Jay Crowder, and those type of guys over there. So I think, for me, Jimmy Butler is a perfect type of leader that I want to play with and have in the locker room with me, because he's cut from the same cloth. He's going to shoot straight. He's not going to ask anybody to do anything that he's not already doing, and that's the type of guy you want on your team.
Quentin, where do you think LeBron James' headspace is at right now? Do you think he's sitting back in his chair surveying the situation? And not that he's taking anybody for granted, but do you not think he's looking at this situation? There's no dynasty Golden State sitting around. There's not Brooklyn with Durant and Irving sitting there. This is a situation where he's got to be looking at this saying, I got to get one here.
Yeah, I think absolutely. I think last night LeBron was sitting there in his suite, and he popped a nice bottle of wine or champagne or whatever he wanted to have, and he sat back and had a nice little Dr. Evil laugh about what's going on, because, you know, the whole time everybody's been tormenting him about this Clippers team threatening the throne, threatening to take the Battle of L.A., and it's like he get to sit back and laugh and say, they didn't even make it to us. I don't even have to deal with this. And so then, I mean, all presumably everybody's looking at it like now they have the cakewalk, but I think Denver should be taken more seriously. But, I mean, I think LeBron was absolutely sitting back having a nice, nice Dr. Evil laugh last night.
Yeah, he should. I mean, he's put himself in a great position. And I think that mentality you spoke of with Jimmy Butler will apply here with LeBron. He's got to make sure all his guys are on board and no one's going to take anyone lightly. And if they don't, you know, they got as much, if not more talent than anyone left. And they'll be a big, big favorite. It's always great catching up with you. Check out the podcast, the Knuckleheads podcast, longtime NBAer Quentin Richardson. Thanks for doing this, Quentin. We'll do it again down the road.
Yes, sir. Anytime, guys. Thanks for having me.
There he is, Quentin Richardson, starting his career with the Clippers. And that was back when they were just a tire fire of an organization. Yet, you know, the history of a team, it happens. You know, like we got one in this town where they just find a way to make it as difficult as possible on themselves and never can get over the hump. And we know exactly what team that is. And the Clippers are in a similar situation in terms of their history. You
think
know,
about
it's like
the,
they just always find a way to lose.
I know you're referring to the Leafs.
Yeah. Course.
Think about being a diehard Leafs fan in the 80s with that nonsense going on. Like, I don't think there was – it seems like the coverage and everything is on steroids these days with social media. And I don't know. It wasn't like that, obviously, because times were different. But can you imagine breaking that down? Overdrive 1982 doing Leafs coverage during that mess. You would have been yelling and screaming every day of the week.
Well, yeah. But don't you think during that mess, it, like their expectations, were they that high? Like, was this during the Ballard era? Like you talked about
Ballard
all that?
Yeah, was still the owner back then in the early 80s. No, I don't think the expectations were high at all, but there are only 21 teams in the league.
Yeah.
So you still made the playoffs some years where they were terrible.
Yeah,
like
we should do a turn back the clock. We should do a turn back the clock radio broadcast. Just have all the headlines from a certain date back in the 80s of the Leafs and just get your reaction to it. It'll be brilliant. Just losing it
daily.
That
would be.
Retroactive snap show.
Retro day. We'll pick one day and just retro day. Get all the headlines, get a bad loss and then a bad trade. You trade Russ Cortland to Montreal for Kordick, and then it's just a tee-off session.
Find a week then. Like, find a week that we can talk about, like, whatever it is. April or March 15th to March 21st.
Well, we'll find the worst possible one.
Pull out that week and go, okay, what would Overdrive look in that scenario, 1984, those dates? Mm-hmm. They played the three games. How did the games go? Did they make these trades? Like, who was the starting goaltender? Who was the star? Like, we should do that. That would be unbelievable to break down yelling and screaming about guys who, you know, have been retired for 30 or 40 years, I guess.
Yeah. Oh, there'd be some great ones. There'd be some great, great material of just who you pick in. Like, that's another thing. You look over the drafting that they did. They had some years where there were guys that got drafted right after they picked that went on 1,300 games, Hall of Fame, and they took some kid out of Cornwall who never even got close to the Marlies, let alone the Maple Leafs. And that is maybe what's more infuriating than anything else is you look at the draft picks and you're like, how could you not – how could you miss that many times? Well, like, there were 21 teams. There weren't that many teams.
I'm looking at the 1994 Toronto Maple Leafs. I'm sorry, 1984 Toronto Maple Leafs. John Anderson, number 10. Number 3, Jim Benning. Number 1, Tim. You're forgetting. Like,
Jimmy Benning was there in 19. Well, they picked first overall and took Wendell that summer.
Timmy Bernhardt was a goaltender. Alan Bester, Greg Brits.
Yeah,
like
who are
Jeff
those
Brubaker,
guys?
Like I, but Jimmy Benz was there.
Jimmy Benning. Yeah.
Jimmy Benning was a good defenseman, wasn't he?
Well, yeah, they were really good skaters. Like the Benning family, they're Edmonton boys, right? They're from Edmonton. The Benning family, they were all like really good skaters.
Do you know that if you start Googling Jim Benning?
Yeah.
Do you know what the first word that comes up with him?
Hair.
Come on.
I'm dead serious. I just started typing into Google Jim Benning. The first thing was Jim Benning hair.
He's letting it get a little salty. He's not touching it up as per usual.
I like it. I like it too. The second one,
I think for free agency, he goes a dark black.
Yes, he should. I think so. You want to be hanging out in the weeds, maybe a camouflage salad. That's what it should be. Camouflage
camo
hair and just sneak around, slither around in the weeds.
You think when Jimmy goes duck hunting in the summer, he goes with a camo paint job on his salad?
That would be...
The duck hunter. I love it. Yes, he should. I think it would be very successful. So let me run these down quickly, okay? So the first one, when you get to Jim Benning, it's Jim Benninghair, then Hockey DB, then Trade History, then NHL, Net Worth, Vancouver Canucks, daughter, son, salary, wife. The first one is Jim Benninghair. That's actually a pretty good activity. We should just type in certain people's names and see what the first thing is that's associated with them. Because
that's a dangerous game.
It can get very dangerous. That's true. It can get very, very dangerous if there was something that happened back in the day and you forgot about it.
Okay, just for argument's sake here, punch in Robert Kraft.
Okay. Do you think Robert Kraft?
Do you think that what we think is going to come
up
immediately?
No, you'd be surprised.
It says Patriots.
Net
Robert
worth
Kraft
is the first one. Robert Kraft, the guy's net worth.
Multi-billionaire. So, yep. But, I mean, that's sometimes, you know, things follow you around. So that's why I wondered that.
No,
if
that's
that
a good one.
Up.
That's a good reference. But, no, it's not even in the top 10. Orchids of Asia is not in the top 10 for Bob Kraft.
There you go.
Okay.
Good. That he's had that scrub from the internet.
What about
fun.
Our boy Caber? You think hair? First one for Brian McCabe.
I'd say Brian McCabe.
It's hair.
No.
It's
is
Brian
it hair?
McCabe.
I thought
hair.
It would be Brian McCabe Leafs.
No, that is number three on the list. Yeah, Brian McCabe hair. What about Strutty?
Oh, for sure it's Strutty's hair. Salad.
Jason Strudwick. No,
salad.
It's not. No, it's wife, Twitter, net worth, career earnings. No. Radio show.
Wow.
Strutty's good. Strutty's off the radar.
Had to have been solid.
No. It's all
way.
Good for Strutty. All right, there you have it.
Catch up with Strutty one of these days.
Yeah, we got to call Strud, see what he's doing. He's out there in the bubble. He's just outside the bubble, but, you know, he's hosting a cup final in his hometown of Edmonton, Alberta. We'll catch up with Strutty for sure. Scott Mitchell coming up. Where do the Jays go from here? The Yankees hanging 20 on them last night. How did he feel about Montoya going that deep into the bullpen? What happens with Derek Fisher moving forward?
What happens down at the Walmart where the guys are playing catch?
Yeah, there's a lot of them being sent to Rochester. Yep, a lot of them being sent east, I guess it is. And how do you solve Garrett Cole tonight? We'll see if he's got the answer. We'll catch up with Scott Mitchell next. All right, Jerry's After Dark later in the hour. Best Bets brought to you by ProLine as well. We'll get to that in just a moment. No hockey game tonight.
I'm not going to lie. It's kind of sad, Hazy. We've been spoiled. I love just finishing work and wheeling onto the couch or chair, and there's a game on, like any time of the day, and then it's coming to an end. It's sad. I don't like it.
No hockey, no NBA. You know, football tomorrow night, and it is a doozy. The battle for the state of Ohio. Browns, Bengals tomorrow night. So basically, it's all about the Jays. And it's not like they're, concerning themselves with what happened last night, or you would hope that they've moved on from that. But the Yankees laid a beating on them last night. They went deep into the bullpen. You got Tanner Roark on the mound tonight, and he's been getting lit up.
You know
Garrett Cole on the
doing.
Mound for the Yankees. You know, I've been saying all afternoon, this feels like a pivotal game in terms of what's going to happen the rest of the way. Not for making the playoffs, but holding on to the two seed against the Yankees. If you can show up tonight, I think it says a lot about this club. Here's our Jays reporter and analyst, Scott Mitchell. Am I reading that right, Scotty? You know, tonight will say a lot about the Jays?
You would hope they would bounce back, and that's kind of what has marked this ball club. They, you know, have been a kind of a quote-unquote resilient team because every time something bad has happened this year, they have found a way to bounce back. You mentioned the pitching matchup. You forgot the other side. Garrett Cole, that's a tough one tonight for them. That's you know, what we call a big mismatch when it's Roark against Garrett Cole. So, you know, it's going to be tough to get that W tonight because he's one of the best pitchers in baseball. But, you know, you hope they put up a good effort. And, it's interesting because this is such a key series. And, you know, I think everyone kind of saw it last night of where these two teams are in a way. And obviously there were some mistakes last night that it's hard to overcome when you're playing a team as good as the Yankees and a team that's kind of starting to come back to health a little bit and find ways to probably be one of those upper echelon teams when all is said and done here in a couple of weeks. So, you know, you hope they put up a good effort, and I really think it would be huge to win this game in terms of, you know, not only the standings, but confidence-wise. But, hey, you got one of the best pitchers on the mound for the Bronx Bombers in Gerrit Cole. So it's going to be a tough ask. You know, I think this team has shown enough this year that, you know, they're on the right track. But when you put them up against some of these powerhouse teams, even ones that are as hurt as the Yankees, you start to see where the deficiencies are, and not in terms of just talent, but being ready to play on that stage.
Scotty, you mentioned some of the errors last night from your eyes. Like, we were talking about it earlier, and I described those as two of the most routine fly balls you can get in the big leagues. Like, in your, like, what the hell happened? What was that?
Well, that's a great question. You know, you could probably ask Derek Fisher, and I don't know that he's going to have an answer. I know Charlie Montoyo and Taijuan Walker didn't have one after last night's game. And, you know, that's such a tricky situation because it's hard to scold guys for physical errors. And that's what Montoyo said after the game. And, you know, I don't disagree. You know, Derek Fisher didn't try to go out there and drop those balls. Derek Fisher doesn't try to go out there and look like a clown show at times. But he does. And, you know, you can scold. You can scold guys for mental errors. You can scold guys for bad base running. You can scold guys for not throwing to the right base or, you know, not making the plays that they're supposed to. But when you have a physical error like that, you know, you can't really say much. And when you look at the history of this guy since they traded for him last year, I mean, the first introduction we got to Derek Fisher was him taking a ball off the face in Fenway Park last summer. So, you know, this isn't just a one-time thing. And it's tough to kind of wrap your mind around why, because like you said, he's a professional outfielder who Ross Atkins talked up at the time of the trade as a guy who could potentially be a long-term center field fit for them. So it's curious in a lot of ways. And, you know, it's impossible to kind of not pile onto the guy. And then when you see what happens today, you know, just
what happened to him today, Scotty?
Well, as the story goes, he was taking some live ABs against Matt Shoemaker, who's trying to make it back from a shoulder injury, and Shoemaker hit him on the knee, and now he's on the IL. So, you know, believe what you want out of that story, but when you look at the situation, it was pretty clear he either needed a mental break on the bench or maybe an extended stay in Rochester, and now he's going to be on the IL thanks to Matt Shoemaker.
Speaking of Rochester, Scotty, I just want to get something clarified. When they say that someone is relocating to Rochester, what the hell's going on down there? Like, what is that? Is it like an empty ballpark where they play catch, or what goes on in Roch?
Well, I mean, they're probably eating some garbage plates. I can guarantee you that. If you've ever been to Rochester, you know what that is, but you know, they essentially just play inter-squad games, and they're playing at Frontier Field, which is the Minnesota Twins affiliate. And Ken Huckabee is down there kind of running that, and they try to make things as real as possible. And, you know, we obviously haven't had eyes on it. We're not down there, but it's essentially a spring training setting. And, you know, we've seen enough of that over the years that these guys try to create scenarios. They try to get, you know, some serious at-bats for guys against pitchers rehabbing, guys that need the work. And, you know, I think when you look at the guys that have come up from Rochester this year, they haven't looked over maps. So they're clearly doing something down there to keep them ready against live pitching and you know, taking it quite seriously. And, you know, a lot of people behind the scenes have given Huckabee credit for that. He was slated to be the AAA manager in Buffalo this year, his first managerial job in the minor leagues. So he's obviously taking that seriously down there to try to get these guys ready. And, you know, the guys that have come up, they haven't looked out of place. So they're doing something right down there.
With Scott Mitchell, our Jays reporter, Jays Yankees tonight, Roark taking on Gerrit Cole. You look at the way it broke down last night. I mean, once Fisher made those blunders, it was over. Taijuan Walker, he couldn't get it back on the rails. He wanted to scissor kick somebody into another galaxy, and I think I know who it was that he had in mind. But then Montoyo decides to go, you know, relatively deep into the bullpen in what ultimately was a lost game, but it was so early into the game.
You know, he goes to Yamaguchi, he goes to Kay, he goes to Giles. Giles now has inflammation again, I believe, in the elbow, or an elbow issue that he was dealing with before. He's back in the IL. They use Baraki up. How did you feel about that, the usage of, you know, the bullpen last night in what was otherwise a lost cause? And it's a bullpen that's on fumes for the most part anyway, just based on the rotation and based on the nature of the season.
Yeah, I mean, I was pretty fine with it. I think when you look at the ramifications from that, I mean, Shun Yamaguchi has been their mop-up guy, for lack of a better term, for most of the year. He's pitched well in spurts and had some days where you kind of say, oh, maybe he should be back in Japan. But when you look at who else they used, they were able to stay away from most of their key high-leverage relievers, Dolis, Bass, guys like that. You know, we saw Anthony Kay demoted today, so that's kind of the collateral damage. You have to use somebody. You have to get some fresh arms up, and it's been such a condensed and unique season, even with 10, 11 guys in the bullpen at times. We've seen this bullpen gassed, and, you know, when you have a starter who can't get out of the second inning, whether it's his fault, the defense's fault, or anyone else's fault, it's going to be impossible to get through that game without taxing at least an arm or two. And they were able to get through it without using their key arms. So they go into a pretty good spot tonight, you know, in game two against these Yankees, having a pretty deep bullpen to reach into. But, you know, Tanner Roark is a guy that you paid $24 million for 2 years, and he needs to get deeper into a ball game. And I'm not just talking deeper into a ball game with a 5-2 deficit. He needs to pitch well. And that's the reason this bullpen has been so taxed at times this year, is the rotation of the Hyunjin Ryu just hasn't been there and hasn't been up to the task. And when you look at the two issues that this team has, they are no different than what we talked about in February. There's a clear need in the rotation still, and there's also a clear need in the outfield for likely an impact center fielder down the road. And when you look at where the Blue Jays are this year, yeah, they're in a great spot. They've played well. They've done everything they needed to do. But when you see them stack up against these real good teams, it's pretty clear where the deficiencies are.
Well, and Giles now going back on the IL, I can't imagine we see him again this year. I mean,
it
screams real serious issues, and hopefully he avoids surgery, but I wouldn't be shocked.
Yeah, look, I mean, I don't want to speculate, but, you know, anytime you have a PRP injection in your elbow, that's a latch-ditch effort to avoid anything that involves a knife. So, you know, I'm not going to speculate too much, but his season's over, and we'll see where it goes from here. He's a free agent, you know, whenever free agency kicks off. And, you know, you have to wonder now, you know, is he going to be back ready for spring training 2021, which with whatever team he's with, or is this going to be a long-term thing? And, you know, again, I'm not going to speculate too much, but anytime you talk to anyone who has a PRP injection, we saw Garrett Richards go through it with the Los Angeles Angels a couple years ago. You know, he was able to last about 6 months, eventually had Tommy John surgery, and then obviously missed a year on top of the PRP injection. That's kind of been a way to avoid surgery. You know, it's unfortunate that Giles came back and could only make it through two outings throwing 94, 95. He clearly wasn't right. So, I mean, you weren't going to get much out of that, Ken Giles, down the stretch here into the playoffs anyways. So, obviously, the Blue Jays decided to just shut him down.
Well, we'll see what they have tonight. I mean, you mentioned it. I don't think anyone's shocked that the Yankees are big favorites tonight. They should be with Cole. The Yankees are getting healthy, and they look like they're trending in a direction we all expected it to go in. But we'll see. It's a pivotal game tonight. And if the Jays can bounce back and show something, I think that goes a long way. Enjoy it, buddy. We'll do it again soon. Thank you for this.
All right, fellas. Cheers.
Scott Mitchell, our Jays reporter. Jays Yankees tonight.
What did he call a clown show? What did he say?
Yeah,
he said Derek Fisher doesn't want to be a clown show in the field.
That's what it was last night. You know, yeah. I mean, he's lucky. He's got a manager like Montoyo who's even keeled, at least publicly. You know, and had his back and said, "Hey, it's a physical error. It's not like he didn't run out a single or
it was just a mental lapse, man. It was just it was like a seizing up or he just froze and it, I mean, I don't know. It was weird to watch. It was really weird to watch.
It was, but there are some famous mental lapses out there, right? I mean, guys have mentioned it. Steve Sachs, who I've actually met, a buddy of mine is like friends with him, like." He had, like, some sort of lapse where he could not throw to first base, correct? And he was, like, I think he was a shortstop or a second baseman. Like, you need to be able to throw to first. And what are the other, like, crazy, like, mental lapses?
Well, Chuck Knobloch was the same way. Yep. Yeah, Knobloch. There was a catcher that couldn't throw to the mound. And John Lester couldn't throw to first. Like, remember, and Lester's a lefty,
John
too.
Lester was throwing the ball with his glove to the first baseman.
I
like, underhanding it the glove with the ball in it. With the ball in it!
World Series. John Lester's like, here, take it.
Yeah, I remember that. I just, but you get it. I mean, golfers have the yips, right? Like golf.
Oh God, yeah. I had to straighten myself out. I was hitting it so good, and I was sculling chips, like just hitting them right in the forehead, and I said, I need to fix this, or it's literally going to drive me away from the game. I just had to go to a short game area up in Georgian Bay, and I said, I'm not leaving here until I fix this. Wow. Well, there's other elements involved that I'll tell you guys privately, but there's been issues with the chipping.
Well, there's been guys on tour. I think our buddy Graham Dillette had a bit of a
he's gone through it, I think. Yeah.
Yeah, he just couldn't. It's just one of those things, Noodles. You stand over it, and you're like, I can't hit this.
Can't do it. Can't
like,
do
I
it.
Like, I can't. I know I can, but I can't. Like, I know
I'm
going to miss
great
amateur
golfers that hit the ball like tour players, and they get around the green. They either chip cross-handed, chip one-handed, or you see all kind. Like, they can't wait. They will pull their putter out anywhere. 40 yards from the green, they're putting it because they just – That's an awful thing to see. I feel awful.
Believe me,
watching.
It happens in every sport. But I remember like a two-game sequence. I was playing in the minors for Houston. Todd McClellan was my coach, and I had just been sent down there. And for some reason, I gave up a muffin in overtime. Like just a, like I didn't even go down on it. It just went five hole. It was just a terrible goal. And I went and saw Todd after the game. I was like, I'm so sorry. Like, that'll never happen again. The next game, the same shot.
Oh, no.
Same shot.
Overtime?
Overtime. Same, like, exact same play. And I remember thinking to myself, what the hell am I doing? Like, I was able to lock it down after that. But, like, two games in a row, the exact same shot scored and like, muffins from the wall. Like, it was terrible.
Yeah, that gets in your head, man.
It
does. And you start thinking it, and that is the true sign of a pro athlete, though, the ability to completely wash out any problems, any issues, you know, and just, I got to forget it. I have to, and I will, and I'm going to move on, and I'm going to get back to my mechanics, and I'm going to do it properly, you know. And,
yeah.
But it can drag on you. It can throw careers off,
well,
you know.
Yeah.
Tin cup. Couldn't do it. Could not make the right play. Now it's a fictional TV character.
But I remember Steve Sachs telling us, like he said, after a while, he was like, it was embarrassing because people were showing up behind, like fans were showing up with giant gloves by first base, like expecting him to throw it right into the crowd. And he was like, that's tough.
Really tough.
A big stage like that.
We'll get to our best bets brought to you by ProLine. Jerry's After Dark as well. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on TSN 2.
Welcome to Jerry's After Dark, where all of your wildest hot takes come to life. Because Jerry's always in the mood for one more, and you know exactly what I'm talking about.
Just like fine wine, it gets creepier over time. Jerry's After Dark. Time now for one more
horny hot take. The Toronto Raptors will have the fifth best record in the East next season. Those sons of b****s better not.
Fifth best for the Raptors. So... Mm-hmm. You do the math on that. I'm assuming Jerry thinks Milwaukee and Boston and Miami.
And then Brooklyn.
Ooh.
Durant will be back, yeah.
Forgot about them. Steve Nash on the bench.
Kevin Durant on the court.
Mm-hmm. All right. I am...
Kyrie.
I'm going to be low on this. I think they're going to finish top four. I do. I think... I think VanVleet's coming back.
What a ballsy call. They're going to go one up than what the Jerry's is.
Well, what do you want me to do? Like, pretend like it would have been better if it was first overall in the East. Then you really got to think. But
there's no
four,
chance of that. I think they're going to have the fifth best record in the East.
Really? You're so confident Kevin Durant, with his pin-like legs, is going to return at 30 years old after an Achilles injury and just be the best player in the world? I don't know.
Yeah, I do. You saw him limp up the court and just lob the ball from half court into the basket. Him at 100%, he's my MVP pick for next season.
That's a pretty good pick. I like that pick. I'm going to say 20%. 20%, they're fifth or worse, I guess. I think they'll be
85%. 85%. They're the fifth best team in the East. And let's keep the tape, Mullen. Keep the tape.
I worry that there could be a little bit of a step back. Just, you know, with Kyle getting a little older, a lot of pressure on Spicy P.
Yeah, Freddie VanVleet might
If Freddie's not here, we'll see. But
I got a feeling, man. Freddie's been that guy that's been kind of discounted and just can't make it. I think he really wants to cash in. And if his agent sniffs out that there's more cake somewhere else, I think he's gone.
Yeah, really? And there may very well be more money somewhere else. That is a high possibility. But I would hope a guy with a chip on his shoulder realizes, you know, this is the team that allowed me to have this opportunity.
They don't care, dude. They don't care. They got this one chance to cash in like a guy, like a heavyweight.
I hear you. But, is it the difference between $30 million and $25? Is that, like, you're cashing in either way. You know, cashing in is not the right term.
Dude, don't discount $5 million like that, please. Like you do.
Well, seriously. I know, but
when you're worth $25 million a year, $5 million is not going to drastically change your life.
I just think it's crazy to disregard. Like, it's just...
It's not me personally who does not have $5 million disregarding $5 million. I'm talking in that stratosphere. It's a different world. But, you know, we'll see. And I hope he returns. I think it's imperative that they find a way to make it work. But, you know, that's...
Yeah, I'm in the middle on this. I'm 61%.
Okay. All right. Time now for our best bets brought to you by ProLine. Looking at the MLB board tonight, I like the Phillies at home. I like the Braves on the road, and I am on Houston big against Texas. Throw down 20, you can score 65. You can find my picks on Twitter at TSN 1050 Radio. ProLine, it's the sports betting game that lets you turn small wagers into big excitement. Before you wager, get the latest odds, event info, and matchup stats on your phone. ProLine, put your knowledge on the line. So, Jays, Yankees tonight, bunch of ball games. And tomorrow we get back into the rhythm of things with the NFL week two. Big hockey game tomorrow as the Islanders look to survive again.
Just hanging around. Yeah.
And we're going to have NBA games going again. You know, we've had a pretty good run here, about a month and a half, where there's been sports overload.
So spoiled. And now you're getting a little bit greedy. And, you know, if there's only one or two on in a night, you're like, you're
kind of. And the U.S. Open tomorrow, right?
Yeah,
by the time
that's
we're on the air tomorrow, we'll know what Tiger shot.
I hope, for their sake, those players, that no caddy does to their player what I did today to my man.
Oh, it's a fireable offense. If the caddy goes, I got it 176 into the wind with a backstop, so play it like, you know, you got about 185 to play with, and it's actually you have 168 to play with, it's Cheech. Yeah. You're fired. Leave. Leave the bag right there. Harry Higgs will be my caddy. I don't ever want to see you again.
Yeah, it was tough. But you battled through it, buddy.
Thanks, pal. Yeah, 83, I'll take that. I mean, I could have been better. I choked down the stretch. I was brutal. The last five holes,
guy.
I was terrible.
You were a fescue guy.
Yeah. Didn't get much help from the caddy and the fescue late in the round, but
I am not going in there. No way. You don't. You know the combo we had.
Yeah.
You don't like it either.
No, I don't. I don't love a fescue search.
I think your exact words were, God damn it, I don't like looking for golf balls.
Oh, there you go.
That's because I was in the fairway. I should have known better. It was going to come back and haunt me. Anyway, we're out of here. Enjoy your evenings. We are back tomorrow at?
Wrong yardage shot at 25 over the green.
4 p.m. We'll chat then.
At Scarborough Nissan, the health and safety of the community and their employees is a top priority.
With extra safety measures in place, Scarborough Nissan welcomes you to experience the Rediscover the Road sales event on now, where you can finance a 2020 Nissan Rogue for 0% APR for 84 months or receive an up to $5,000 cash purchase bonus on other select models. Scarborough Nissan, driving satisfaction on Eglinton Avenue East at Warden Avenue. Visit ScarboroughNissan.com. You've been listening to the Overdrive Podcast, Hour 3, powered by Scarborough Nissan. Driving satisfaction. Finance a 2020 Rogue for 0% APR for 84 months or get a cash purchase bonus on other select models. Scarborough Nissan, Eglinton Avenue East at Warden.